This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Let's get into this one. And I wonder how many of us have actually managed to experience it. And if you have managed to experience it, please give us a call. I would like to really hear from you. And I've seen a couple of your tweets coming in, and I'll read them out as we progress with this conversation. But today we're talking here about accent bias and discrimination in the workplace, right? Having certain accents, do you become trusted more? In fact, you know, there's a study that's been done that says that Model C accents have become trusted more. And I'll talk to you a little bit about it. But have you experienced accent bias and discrimination in the workplace? Let me paint you a picture, right? We can be two of us saying the very same thing, but somebody else's words, voice gets heard simply by the way in which they articulate and the way that the accent is used. We could be saying the same thing. We can be saying, do not go there, that is danger. Right. And because the manner in which I say it, one will be taken seriously according to the study, and the other one will be completely negated. So does having an accent, especially in the workplace, open you up to better opportunity and give you a seat at the table? It's a difficult conversation to have because it requires us to introspect even. I know we're supposed to speak about how there are 11 official languages. It shouldn't. Let me say this from the get-go. Accent should not pay to mind, nor should language pay to mind what opportunities are made available to you. Because I truly believe the universal language that we all should be speaking is called money. If we don't speak the universal language of money, then what's the point, right? But that's not how society is. And so do we discriminate people based on language? So you, even in the workplace, have you found that you have to prep up your language, prep up the way that you speak so that you can sound more intellectual? Right. Prep up the way that you articulate so that you can sound more intellectual. I'm in the media industry, so I can tell you from the get-go within the media industry, I was taken through voice training from early on, from my days at 702. I can say it now because, you know, I started off at 702. Those that know my career journey, I started off at 702 before I embarked off. That's where I got my training from. And with that, they even took me for voice training so that not only is it about articulation, but it's the way that you actually inflect and the way that you use your voice, because the deeper it is, the more that you're able to be heard. Because at a certain frequency, people shut down and shut off according to these studies. And the way that you enunciate and pronounce certain words will get you ahead. That's been my experience in the media industry, at least. That there's a big, obviously, and given the fact that I'm in the industry of communication, there's a big emphasis on how we talk, how I speak, how I enunciate, how I pronounce my words, how I put together my grammar. Right, the type of words that I use, how verbose I am, all of this, right? Being able to use words like esoteric, just so randomly in conversations, it counts. That's my industry. But what have you experienced in your sector of industry? And if you had to go to the industry and say, hello, but, have you had to do that? Just so that you can sound more together, hey? Or does it even count? So South African heritage is subject for celebration, but not all expressions of that heritage are celebrated. In fact, experts say that the country is plagued by accent discrimination. It is not always obvious, but it starts the moment we open our mouths. Now, research suggests that we judge each other's proficiency, intelligence, and ability to do the job based on the way that we speak. Popularly known as the twang, accents of Black South Africans who attend what were formerly whites-only schools, Model C schools, are now amongst indistinguishable from white South African mother tongue English speakers. Researchers at the University of Cape Town actually took a scientific approach to that question. It was Isi Yakman, who is a researcher officer at the Southern Africa Labour and Development Research Unit, SALDRU, Malcolm Caswell, associate professor of economics at UCT. SALDRU investigated discrimination according to race and accent by observing a trust game played among student volunteers. Right. So the experiment, let me tell you a little bit about it. So the experiment found that among men, hear this out, guys, among men, accent and race matters a great deal. In particular, men trust each other more if they are the same race and if they speak with a mother tongue English accent. However, women are not very responsive to differences in accents. While being white and sounding like a first English speaker go almost hand in hand, the same is not true for black South Africans. On the front, researchers found that the accent effect was particularly pronounced, listen to this one, amongst black men. The accent effect was particularly pronounced among black men. The authors actually speculate that the accent effect is part of a systematic pattern of high status versus low status language legacy that still reverberates in contemporary South Africa. Does accent matter? And how has having your accent affected you in your workplace? I'll start. Look, there's only one way to handle this kind of conversation, right? And that's to be completely authentic and true. My name is Faith Mangope. I've benefited from my accent. I have. I really have. I've benefited from being in circles where people said, oh my goodness, you speak so well. Or you enunciate well. Or, oh my goodness, you articulate yourself so clearly. I have. I'm able to say, no, I do not agree with this because of the way I speak. I have. But if I did not have this accent, would the same opportunities be given to me openly? Let's start that conversation after this. It's 18 minutes after one.
Follow the conversation online at Power FM 987.
Let's get into it. Let's welcome our guest this afternoon for that conversation. First up, we've got Vumile Msweli, who's a career coach and HR expert. Vumile, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Good afternoon, Faith. Thank you so much for having me.
We've also got Dr. Sharon Munyaka, who is a work psychologist and president of the Society for Industrial and Organizational Psychology of South Africa. Dr. Sharon, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you so much, and a good afternoon to your listeners.
We've also got Menzi Maseko, who is a cultural expert. Menzi, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Sanbonani, greetings, everyone. Glad to be here.
And we've also got somebody who is adding Angela Lowe. Angela, a very good afternoon to you and welcome to Power Lunch. I know that you feel very passionate about this particular topic, and I'm glad that you get to share your experience as well.
Good afternoon to your listeners.
Perhaps let's start off with you, Dr. Sharon, in terms of what we've witnessed where language and accents are concerned, especially in the workplace. And I bring this from the place of it shouldn't, right? It should accent and the way I speak should not formulate a ground from which you get to judge whether or not I'm more intellectual or more capable of doing my job. But in the South African context, how much of it does it actually still count?
Faith, unfortunately, it does still play a very big role. And I think the way our minds are wired, we automatically categorize people depending on how one speaks. Mm. So depending on the context, one might decide to code switch, which depending on who's there, we speak in a particular way. And depending on what we're trying to get out of the conversation or out of that particular setting, you switch up in the way that you speak. So if, for example, I'm afraid to be judged for my accent, I might deepen it so I sound more black, I pronounce my word, I place more emphasis. But if I want to fit in and want to be perceived as someone who knows what they're talking about, I then speak in a particular way. So unfortunately, this bias that comes with accent is there, and I don't think it's something that's going to go away anytime soon. It is alive and well.
You know, and Vumile, I also wonder about, you know, especially kids that are coming in from, let's say, the rural areas, and then they come into university. University doesn't care much as long as you're able to do the job and study and the like. And then they leave university and they've got this expectation of getting into world of work. How many of them actually get, you know, absorbed within these workspaces, especially those that have got heavy accents? You know, there's some places where you've got a Bedi accent or you've got a Zulu accent and the like. And how many of them get taken seriously when they say, I'm looking for a job?
I think it's a really big challenge. And I think what's most important, the real question is the person on the other side, can they understand? So I come from KZN. The moment I hear a Zulu accent, it's a non-accent to me, right? And I think that's why it's so important to have diverse people in the hiring space to make sure that we are acquiring talent from different spaces. But even more so than the accent is how the person feels when speaking. And I think that's the real challenge. It's often, yes, English is not your mother tongue. Now you're having to articulate yourself in English and you're feeling like, oh, I'm mispronouncing it. I'm not saying it right. That it actually starts to make you look and sound like you're incompetent or aren't able to really express yourself. But meanwhile, it's the means of communication, it's the language that's sort of creating a bit of a barrier and a bit of a challenge. So I think that's where a lot of young people sometimes fall short. And this is why the preparation from an interview perspective becomes so critical. To say, even if you might not have the accent you would like, what are you trying to say and can you say it clearly?
Sure. You know, Menzi, I was reading here, even parts of the study, research showing that the speaking with a non-native accent, you know, even saying this, right? It's so difficult to even say this because you start realizing how far we have to come as a country. But speaking with a non-native accent is linked to career possibilities and progression as it can influence managers' perceptions of speakers' fluency as well as expectations concerning non-native speaker performance abilities.
It's very clear that these so-called non-native accents and the perceptions, so to speak, are based on, how can I say, a worldview that I hope is fading away, which I believe is a colonial mentality. Mm. It's certain tropes that we learned from a culture of discrimination. So the accent is usually related to, well, it's perceived to relate to your environment. So if you speak with a particular accent, it is a reflection of the environment you were raised in or you were trained in or schooled in. So that accent, no, the whole discussion about class, you know, we can speak about it from a Marxist point of view about class divisions, dialectics of laborers and servants, and it's all a baggage carried from a era of racial discrimination. And that racial discrimination in certain places is not actually racial. It is more, again, class, classism. Mm. You know, it's just classic things that we have to unlearn because it's obvious that your accent is not a measure of your intelligence. It should be obvious, but to a whole lot of people that are still carrying what we call in Zulu, insila, which is kind of like dirt on the body. He's still carrying dirt from the previous era. So it's things that we have to unlearn through the decolonial process whereby we, and the decolonial, by the way, it's not only something that is happening in Africa. We must also understand that the very same thing that we are seeing here is happening also in South America. It's happening in certain parts of the United States. Oh, you sound like that. Oh, you're probably from Mexico. Oh, you're probably from Hispanic spaces. So you are basically guilty by association of it by your accent before people get to the point of measuring your intelligence through your ability or your capability. So it's just all that baggage as far as I'm concerned.
I hear you. And Angelo, you know, it's you've studied extensively. And your education background, and then you have to marry it against the work opportunities, but also the accent, right? You'd be termed to have a strong colored accent, so as it were. How has accent affected you in your spaces?
Before I get into that, right, like I just want to add to the conversation from in terms of those studies, what I find fascinating about the studies that you were citing was how the twang or the Model C accent was a sign of trust because the basically if we look at how corporate SA is structured is that it's mostly white people that are in the workplace and mostly white owned. And so when you come through with a Model C accent, it's an indicator that you've been through the same education systems as white people. And so therefore people trust you and your capabilities with that. And I think that's really important. So coming back to my own accent, Faith, you and I, we studied together. In fact, I want to speak about a specific instance, which is a clear example of this, like, and not to detract from you because you're amazing at what you do, but for that 702 interview together. And I knew you would get that job, and I knew it because of this, because even in my lectures, even through my extensive studies, I was always told that I wouldn't I'm in broadcast because I didn't have the correct accent. It is 15 years since we've been in university together. Mm. And I can say the complete opposite is true because I'm on radio and on television and in newspapers every other day. But because of my accent, my own lecturers who were there to train me for this profession had already planted seeds of doubt in me that I would only ever be a print journalist.
Sure. And again, this you've experienced, and I mean, and I say this because we went to school together, right? So just to give people a little bit of context, Angela and I studied international relations together and history and all the stuff at WITS. So we got the edge together. And I remember those, again, if you know my career and my background, I was discovered. I really was. It was like a random discovery. I was discovered by 702 and the broadcast band was there and Angela was with me at the time. And Angela, you said that you knew I was going to get it because of the way I spoke. Whereas on your side of things, it's almost like there was an automatic discrimination because of your colored accent.
Yeah. And that's not to detract anything, because I like, you're super talented and you do have the sort of, I would say, the privilege of having gone to those schools that have taught you to enunciate and to speak in a specific kind of way. And that did give you an edge. And I think the study you're referring to is that employed simply because of their accent. And there's a danger in that, because if we're constantly mimicking what we believe to be whiteness or the sort of ideal kind of employee and that looking or sounding a particular kind of way, we're going to lack in actually finding real talent, because we're literally basing our employment decisions on the way that people sound and not what they actually bring to the table.
And I want us to be able to touch base on this, and I'll open up the phone line so when we come back from the news. Does accent count? The way that you speak, the way that you enunciate your words, does it actually count? Dwight K, is it Scrooty or something? Scroote or Shoot? Dwight saying that Faith, the short and simple answer is yes. It shouldn't matter, but it does, especially in corporate. Max saying that accents matters because it can determine whether or not you are heard, but articulation and correct grammar matters more. Sometimes I also get annoyed by some radio presenters who don't seem to even care about this at all, and I listen to Power FM only. Well, thank you for listening to us as well. But does accent count? And how has accent deterred or opened up opportunities for you within the workspaces that you have? I'll take your calls on 0861-987-000 or 0833-030-3703. Right now, it's 1:30. Let's get your latest in Power News.
Call Faith on 0861-987-000.
It's 26 minutes to go before the top of the hour. We're still in the thick of the conversation. We're talking here about accent bias and discrimination in the workplace. Does accent matter? I would like your thoughts on it on 0861-987-000-833-030-3703, as we're with Vomile Msweli, Dr. Sharon Munyaka, as well as Menzi Maseko. And I'd like your experience as well. I'm going to go straight to the phone lines. Let me start off in Soshanguve. Hello, Sakil.
Good day, Faith. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks, and you, sir. Go ahead.
Good, good. And to your guest as well, Sanbonan. I just wanted to express the following. I'm actually quite disappointed that we are raising that question as if we want to find out as to whether accent matters. Accent does not matter. It has never mattered. The only thing that matters is that can people be able to compute? Can people be able to produce? We've got a lot of Chinese who cannot speak English properly, but they produce cars. We've got a lot of Germans who cannot speak English in the right accent, whatever you call right is, but they produce cars. And I think for people who are in such a powerful position, as you say, as you are in, to bring it as a question as to whether does it matter or does it not matter, it's a little disturbing, because people should be empowered to say your accent does not matter. It matters what you know, not how you express what you know, because we need to guard against this perpetual self-hate that has been inflicted on us by the system. Now it seems as if we are perpetuating it by saying, if you don't speak English in a certain accent, you are not intelligent enough. And I'm just saying that's not the case.
Sakile, let me interject there and say this. We have to bring these conversations to the fold. And I'll tell you why. In 2022, even according to the science, it shows, you see, when the research does not lie, if there's research to back it up, the research shows it does. The purpose of this conversation is to be able to move on and say, now that it does, not discrediting the experience and the lived experience of those that are in corporate South Africa and those that seek to be in corporate South Africa, we cannot take away from their experiences, because we want to create a world that is truly inclusive and truly universal. Before we can create that world where accent does not matter, where your economic background does not matter, where your talent is the one thing that should be the one that gets you through the door, let us first tackle the lived experience of South Africans who would say to you, yes, because of my accent, I've been discriminated against. Because of where I come from, I've been discriminated against. Because then we know the benchmark and we can understand from where we actually want to build. So we're not talking here about idealism. And there's a thing. We can envision the South Africa that we want to have. We want to have a South Africa where accent does not matter. We want to have a South Africa where your economic background does not matter, where your network does not matter, where your political alignment does not matter. Unfortunately, the lived experience of the South African is that we're not there yet. So let's talk about the lived experience so that we can find anecdotes for that very same lived experience. But we cannot exclude what is being faced by a majority of South Africans. As you heard, even with Angelo saying, I could have been given economic opportunities, but even my own lecturer said I would never make it in broadcasting because I've got a coloured accent. So accent, it does matter. What we have to do now is say, now that we've established it does matter, how do we find anecdotes so that we as society can evolve from where we're from? But we cannot discredit the lived experience because we're trying to create a better world. The better world comes in from acknowledging where we are right now. That's why we're having this conversation. Sakile.
Okay, just to add on something, I do understand where you're coming from.
Okay.
But just to say, Nelson Mandela was the most respected human being in the world at his time. And he had a heavy Xhosa English accent. And yet he was respected throughout the entire world. Let's keep that in mind.
I hear you. Nelson Mandela also spent 27 years in prison. But how many Nelson Mandelas are there? Right? We're not trying to find the anomaly. I don't want us to find an anomaly. I want us to be in a space where we could all be given economic opportunity and not have to spend 27 years in jail for it. Raputin Attridgeville, hi.
Hi, Fred. How's it?
Very well, thanks, yeah. Andrew, sir.
Yeah, people must not live in a savanna where it does matter and it works. It works. It opens doors and does that. Even go to Zululand, they try when I got accent how Zulu is one. You know, you'll never get any far. Mm? Accent does matter everywhere that you go. And then they try to deny the reality. It does not help anyone.
Yeah, and I completely hear. It's lovely to say we should be aspiring to be this country, but before we aspire, let's face the reality. And the reality is that it does. Now that we've established that it does, how do we fix for it? How do we evolve as society? Even us as Black people, how do we evolve?
Yeah, true. No, thanks, Fred.
Thank you, Raputin Attridgeville. Let me go to Thabo in Rustenburg. Hi.
Hi, Faith.
Hi, Thabo. Go ahead, sir.
How are you, Faith?
Very well, thanks, and you, sir.
Shut up. You know, one thing that I've noticed, ne?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I've got you.
And I'm guilty for that discrimination of judging people based on their accent, ne? But I was not aware until I hear this conversation right now. Ne? So about 3 months back, I went to some event, ne? I went alone and I met these other 4 guys. And we sat on the on the same table. I was the 5th guy. So we become familiar with one another. So this other guy I became friends with him because of his accent. Ne? Mm. And when we parted ways, I was only interested in having his numbers. And guess what I wrote his name as?
What did you write?
I wrote him as well-spoken. I did not even care about his name. Even to this day, when I call him, hey, well-spoken, where are you? Can we hang out? So the accent thing does not only apply in the workspace. It applies even
in social
settings. Because when I was with those guys, I trusted him more than the other guys because the way he spoke, the choices of words, like, you understand, Faith? Mm. So yes, it does matter, accent. I agree with that research.
Thank you. Vumile, you know, this made me realize Thabo saying that I took down this guy's number and I found him more trusting, even in a social circle. You know, it made me think of scammers. They always say that the people that scam you, you know, they're the most articulate, most well-spoken individuals, because in order for you to gain their trust, they have to sound like they know exactly what they're talking about. And how many of us fall into even this issue of being scammed? It could be us being scammed of money. It could be us being scammed of, and usually money, but it could be us being scammed of just, you know, opportunities by people who speak well. And therefore, because of our unconscious bias, we tend to sway more to them because they can speak English properly. They are articulate and therefore they cannot rob me. Scammers, Vumile.
I think it's across, right? So definitely with scammers. And I think it's really the art of seduction mentally. And that's what we're also doing in corporate. We are seducing people to our point of view, to buy our product, to engage us or to buy into us as a brand. But I also think it's very important for us to be cognizant of the fact that this is not unique to South Africa. So I've been fortunate to live in London. And if you're in London, you'll notice that different accents give different sort of perspectives or perceptions or biases. So if you're in Liverpool or Newcastle, people tend to think, not really, really friendly. But if you are from Cockney, everyone thinks this person is not intelligent, because of how strong that particular accent is. So if you are sort of from Northern London, all of a sudden you're seen as someone who's capable, very confident and well-spoken, purely based on accent. And this is a phenomenon across the world. If it's happening in the home of English, which is England, for me, it shows that it's not just unique to us. So I think people do use their accents to their benefit and sometimes not to their benefit. And often what I also find interesting is if you are going to a space where you have an accent, how do you leverage that accent to make yourself stand out? So there's some people I've seen do this very, very well, where they say, listen, I've got my strong Zulu accent and I will over alliterate, over enunciate so you can hear me clearly, and you start focusing on the content of what I'm saying. So I think it's very, very interesting how these biases filter into every aspect of our lives from a social perspective, which of course is where our first sort of career positioning is happening, straight through to the boardroom.
And as you're saying that even in different countries, I mean, I heard that also in the UK, 30% or so of people actually suffer from accent discrimination simply because of where they're from.
And you start to see this even more when you're finding countries that have lots of immigrants. Like the gentleman mentioned earlier, that if you are sitting in the border of Texas and you hear from someone from Mexico, you automatically start getting a little bit wary of them. Mm. But, you know, I see this also, I spent a lot of time in Nigeria, I see this as well, where people who are seen to have a foreign accent are often favored over someone who has a local accent. Because the perception there is that if you've got a foreign accent, it means you must have studied outside of the country, which implies that your quality of education is higher. So how we will treat you will tend to be a little bit more superior. So it's interesting how in every country, that particular accent has a particular bias. And I think in the South African context, it is a lot of unlearning, because often we now find ourselves saying, oh, well, I'm well-spoken, but we still have family members who don't speak English. I still have family members who don't speak English. So it doesn't take away from their ability to be smart or contribute. It's merely an accent. So for me, I go back to the point of how do we go about making sure we have more diversity in spaces so that your accent actually becomes irrelevant. The content of what it is that you're trying to convey becomes a critical matter.
Let me go back to the phone line, 0861987000. Oh, here's somebody interesting. Zwanele Mangi, you listening in? Hi, good afternoon.
Hi there, Faith. Yeah, I've been listening to this very interesting discussion. Let me articulate my personal viewpoint. It's a viewpoint, not reflective of wherever I'm associated with. But yes, here's my view.
You're calling in as a listener.
Yeah, as a listener.
As a listener. Indeed. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I subscribe to the concept of beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. So I don't know what is an equivalent expression of that for listening, because it just depends who is the recipient. I think it'll probably talk to age groups and all of that. Sometimes, for instance, if I speak for myself, for instance, sometimes with people like you, Faith, that speak so eloquently and all of that, I read a lot of superficiality, rightly or wrongly. I sometimes see a lot of that. And then if a guy speaks with like a deep, call it Limpopo, KZN or Tosa or any of these other African accents, as it were, as long as that person speaks correct grammar and all of that and the content is rich, even if he struggles sometimes, I am able to see the content out of that, I actually see value in that person. So if I was sitting in a hiring position, I can tell you that for me, the fluency of Faith Mongope would not actually give you an advantage. If anything, I would probe more from you, just to see whether you are just bamboozling me with your language or you actually have content, as it were. Yeah. So I just think it depends on who's listening. But I agree with the view that there are people that if you do a Faith Mongope, then 50% is done. But
You call it? You do a Faith Mongope? I never thought of it.
It's just a shorthand.
That's what you guys say in this. Because if I look at my own journey, Faith Mongope, so that half the work is done. Nyaniswa. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Enjoy. Let me go.
Thanks. Let me go to Koketso in Midrand. Hi, Koketso.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Seducer. Go ahead.
Good. I just want to speak about this the topic that you're having, guys.
Yes, and you're a paramedic, hey, Koketso?
Yes, I'm a paramedic.
Closer.
So I don't want to sound like I'm a racist or what, man. But then you see this accent and language thing is very important, and I think it's something that we need to accept this situation. Because... as I said, I'm a paramedic, so I'll go to a scene. Let's say maybe it's a motor vehicle accident, and then when I get there, I find like it's a white African speaking white person, and she's old, and you'll find that maybe sometimes they are confused, okay? And then when you get there, you say, "Hello, ma'am, I'm a paramedic. I'm here to help you. What's wrong?" So that you ask, so that you can listen to the level of consciousness, okay? And then they will say, "No, I'm fine. Don't touch me. I'm fine. I'm okay." And by that time, maybe it's at night, she's alone there, and you just got there. But then when you start to greet in Africans, when you say, maybe it's in the morning, "Goeiemôre, ma'am," I can see. So I don't know Africans, but I'm trying to make sense, okay? Then you say, I'm a paramedic. I guess you show them the help. What's wrong in Africans, okay? And then you can see the movements that, okay, she's trying to give you that attention. And as you can see, even if we're biased, somewhere, I could wait Africans, we just can touch there and there. Even if we're biased, but because of you speaking it in Africans and in that accent, she gives you attention and you can easily help them. You get what I'm saying? So this accent thing and language thing, I think, like you guys are seeing in the studio, it's very important.
I hear you, Koketso. Go to duty. I hear the phone ringing there. Thank you so much, Koketso, in Midrand. You know, Menzi, and the thing is that we have to look at the context of the country, right? Corporate South Africa predominantly, what is the foundation of corporate South Africa? Corporate South Africa is built significantly on the cheap labor of black people, but on the more privileged labor of white people, the ones who are in management positions, in the recruitment space, in the hiring space, a lot of them are white. A lot of them are white male, or they are Indian and the like. And it's the assimilation. But is corporate South Africa, even at a stage where it can be diversified enough, where accent does not matter? Are we even close to even being there yet?
Well, I think first we must start on the by acknowledging the fact that most of us agree that this is a universal problem.
Yeah.
This is happening in Europe. It happens probably also in spaces in Japan or China. So basically, by saying that, we are acknowledging the fact that it's a class problem. But again, for fear of repeating myself, it is an inherited problem, inherited from an era whereby we are actually an era that we are moving away from, because it is very clear that even a person's skin tone or a person's accent is not a determinant of their competency, right? We agree on that. But as you've just mentioned, the power, the masters of industry appear to belong to a particular demographic, and people from that particular demographic. Let me give you another quick example. You know, what Baba Manye just raised is very important, because he's speaking about the fact that it's in the eye of the beholder. For certain people of a certain consciousness, your accent, it sounds more native and more authentically native. It gives you, it depends again, I think, on industries. You know, the creative industry may look at different things than when, for example, a Deloitte would look at, or a, you know, corporate, like the finance or the commercial sphere. And some people will hire you for your accent, if you are going to be a rep. Let's say, for example, you're working for ABI or for Coca-Cola or for SAP, and your job will mean that you have to interact with people who speak in your accent. So your accent becomes a boon, for example. It becomes a blessing for you, because you are required to go and immerse yourself amongst the people that speak kind of relatively like you. Of course, it's still a kind of... Well, it's not discrimination, but what would you call it? Let's call it discrimination in the dictionary sense of the word, you know? Mm. Basically, at the end of the day, it depends where you are and the eye of the director, you know? What are they looking for at that particular space? I used to work in marketing. I studied social linguistics. You know, I studied a little bit of marketing. I dropped out, but then I studied, qualified as a linguist in something called sociolinguistics, which is not just about the art of writing and how words are created, but how society actually responds to words, and how certain ways of speaking are actually established over time. So this thing of accent is going to actually wear out as the playing field, the industrial or the employment area becomes kind of leveled out. It's going to take some time, you know. A certain kind of ideologies about how a person speaks and how a person appears are out over time. But you need to have these conversations so that someone can actually wake up, like the brother that called. He was not aware that he was being discriminated. But after listening to this show, he's like, oh, wow, I judge this guy by the way he speaks. There was something I related with. But that is because of some learned behavior internally that he has internalized, without being aware of it in his life.
I hear you loud and clear. I'm going to read a couple of tweets and I'm going to go back to the phone lines. Jablani Chipana saying, Faith, if I didn't have the accent, I wouldn't have been able to close deals and I would be unemployed right now. That's very interesting. Okoke Tsokekana saying that my husband always laughs at people when they speak bad English and I always have to correct him and calls people with accents coconuts. Matter honestly, English accents make people sound wise. Dr. Musa Mayais is saying the English accent talk is interesting. Thank you. For oral exams in medicine, it might mean the difference between a pass, a fail, and a distinction. Really, Dr. Musa, even in oral exams with medicine, it might mean the difference between a pass, fail, and a distinction. Is it Kukelezo L saying that I agree with you? Everything begins with acknowledgement, then an actual dialogue. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about it. Let me go to Durban. Hello, Stembiso.
Hi, Faith, and to your listeners.
Hello, Sisi. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're talking about, can we call it accentism?
Accentism. There's colorism. Now there's something called accentism. I like it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I want to agree with Umanyi and your other guests that it's about the industry and where you work, how far are you in your career? Because like in my industry and where I work, you know, if you have an accent, we actually judge you. And if I was sitting in an interview, you know, and you've applied and you come with an accent, I would score you low because I would feel that your level of analysis, you know, is kind of limited, so to speak. Yeah, so it depends with the industry, you know, and I'm just, you know, thinking that, you know, actually, I mean, where I've worked and where I'm working now, where you have like older people, senior people working in certain positions, you know, and maybe a few, you know, junior staff members who be coming from medical schools and private universities and all of that. You know, I'm getting a sense that over time they actually tone it down a little bit, you know, so that they assimilate and be accepted in the industry. So I really, you know, think, it depends on the industry and field. I work in the academy in social sciences, politics, and gender.
If you've got an accent that sounds more like me, for example, then it would be almost a, would it be like a twang accent as opposed to if you've got a more, let's say like a deeper, let's say a Zulu accent or deeper, you know, Tswana accent, it would be different.
Okay. When you talk, I can hear that you went to a Model C or a private school, you know, but your accent is pure English, but it has that, I mean, your home language is Tswana. I mean, it has that. Yeah, you're not trying to be white. Yeah, make a comparison for an example with Maimane Musi, Maimane, and the current Johannesburg mayor, Dr. Mpo. You know, they both have, you know, very posh English accent, and you can see that they both went, you know, to private school, you know, and, you know, probably educated in, well, not in private school.
Model C school.
Yeah, but yeah. Maimane's, you know, English accent, although it's pure, but it's very African.
Okay.
I mean, he's got a Soweto, you know, Zulu, Tswana, Sesotho accent of posh English, and you have the same. But in Mpo, you know, you know, she has a very, you know, white, you know, fancy, twangy English accent. Gotcha. You know, I don't want to be judgmental, you know, but you know,
in your space, that in my you'd be space, able to like make a difference.
You know, I'm finding it very difficult to take it seriously, if you ask me.
I like the authenticity, you know, Stimbi. We have conversations like this because, you know, we need to be able to be authentic. I really do appreciate your insights. Let me go to Lele in Itlhabile. Hello, Lele.
How is this?
Hi, Mama. Like,
Good thing.
Go ahead, sir.
The accent, it doesn't work as I'm teaching in the townships. That I see these young ones who schooled in the Model C, then they go to varsity and do education and come and teach in township. It becomes a problem with their accent that I read it again. It doesn't sell that banana. It doesn't get to their level that they can understand your content. And again, in politics, I know the accent they are thinking. I again want to speak it. This one got to sell out.
This African English when you are in the politics.
So you want the Kada accent? You must have a Kada accent.
When you come up as a politician and then come up with this accent, Yako modesty. I don't trust. And then when coming to, again, I think it goes to where are you working? Like your guest is saying, like when you are maybe working in the private sector, maybe you are selling. I think there it might fail. But then in my case, to wrap up, the accent that I enjoy, I love that. The way he's flowing with the language. That is the only time that I enjoy the accent. But then, I'm Africa, they're real.
I love it, Lele. Thank you very much. And it's very interesting, isn't it, that you're saying that it depends which sector of industry you're in. In politics, does that mean that I need to have a Kada accent in politics in order for me to be taken seriously? Otherwise, I'm not seen as a purely South African. And then if I go to perhaps a more corporate one, do I need to just change the inflections and change the way that I speak so that I can, I'm able to articulate myself better? I'll take more of your calls, and we'll also come to the understanding of how do we start unlearning certain hard wiring and certain societal constructs that have been perpetuated over years. Where do we start unlearning, and where does the younger generation fit in this unlearning? But right now it's 2 o'clock. Let's get your latest Empower News with Nyanka Lotefo. Do you think you've got an accent?
No, I hope not.
Call Faith on 0861-987-000.
We're going to be wrapping up in just a moment with our guests. We're looking at accent bias and discrimination in the workplace. Our Model C accents are seen to be trusted more. This is according to studies, right? It was two researchers also at the University of Cape Town that took a scientific approach to the question around accents, the discrimination according to race and accent, by observing a trust game played among student volunteers. So the experiment found that among men, accent and race matters a great deal. In particular, men trust each other more if they are of the same race and players, and also with the players that speak the mother tongue English accent. Women, however, seem to be less responsive. So how do we start unlearning this? Menzi Maseko is still with us. Dr. Sharon Munyaka is still with us, as well as Vumile Msweli. Dr. Sharon, a lot of unlearning needs to happen for us to progress as society. But we're unlearning from, I think, generations of hardwiring in terms of what is viewed as trustworthy, what accent is viewed as a great accent to have, what is good English, what is bad English, and the economic scales that are attributed to such. But how then do we start psychologically breaking down or decolonizing some of these constructs that have been formulated over years?
So I think as humans, we thrive on data. So when we find evidence that, oh, just because you speak in this way, it doesn't mean you're less intelligent. Just because you articulate something in this way, it provides our brain with information. So we have to constantly disrupt our mental models. We have to constantly check ourselves. It's like, you know, how we dress, right? When we're going for an interview, why are we intentional about how we're dressing? Because we're trying to manage perceptions, right? So if we are in positions of leadership, if we are part of, you know, panels where decisions are being made, we can use those spaces to start challenging the content.
I mean, when you start,
So with challenging those concepts, it really just helps us to be able to carry the conversation and to actually ask, why are we declining this client? And if you have the power and the rank, you are able to start changing the narrative around how people speak. We just need new evidence. We just need to be encouraged that, oh, it's actually okay. Because for some people, having a distinct accent makes them unique. It makes them stand out. So how do we start embracing that? How do we start normalizing that in our workplaces? So let's use our rank within the spaces we find ourselves.
But it also requires, Vumile, for us to start societally. So us in our homes, us in our own spaces, that us as Black Africans don't judge each other based on the accent that we have. You know, one of our callers was very authentic, and I really appreciate this kind of authenticity when we're dealing with this, any form of subject matter, was saying, I took down a guy's number purely based on how he spoke. And I even said he spoke well.
No, definitely. I think it's very, very, the onus is on us to really, really shift that. And also what I find very interesting is how that dynamic changes, right? So a lot of us have, you know, we have different accents, but when we are at home and we hear someone else speak differently, it's not very conscious. Mm. We listen to what it is that they're saying, but it changes all of a sudden when we bring it into the corporate space. And I always find this very, very interesting, right? Because obviously the accent is how you sound when speaking a particular language, predominantly being English. If I spoke in Zulu, all of a sudden a lot of people assume in Gauteng that I'm Xhosa because I speak very rural sounding Zulu. So for me, it's always interesting to say, does the content or my intention shift merely because of the language? because I'm able to express myself comfortably in both. So for me, it really becomes a case of, if at home I'm comfortable with Nomaswazi speaking to me in this particular accent, why does it change just because I'm in a corporate boardroom? And I think it is that aspiration to what we think success sounds like and what it's been like historically. Sure. But I think that entire notion has to be redefined.
Let me go to Anne in Ilovo. Hello, Anne.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Faith.
It's a pleasure.
One thing I want to say is that accent will forever, forever be a determining factor whether you are in or you're out. It doesn't matter where we take, where we go. And it's not going to change in ever so many ways. Let me give an old example when Lindiwe Mazibuko was in Parliament, how she used to be referred to as a tea lady because of her accent. And let's also remember that Unaledi Pandor was mocked in Parliament because of her accent. So in corporate South Africa, we prioritize children who can speak proper, what we call proper English, which means refined English, which means Model C or private school English. Whereas outsiders say we miss an opportunity in a country that has 11 official languages. People can't express themselves in Soto, Pedi, Tswana, or whatever, because you don't sound educated if you express yourself in Setswana. You have got to try and force it to be in English and matter that English and then be judged on how you did not present yourself well. So I think we are in a country that will forever be going against itself, because on one side, the languages have all been made official, but on one side, we are only measured on English, which is just one of the 11. Even the cabinet ministers, they fail to present themselves in the languages that they are saying are official. You would find the Minister of Education butchering English, and you sit down and you say, if she's doing this and Minister of Education, what's going to happen to our children? So language will be forever a measure of judgment, because where I'm sitting, I'll say that person is not intelligent because they try to say something in English and they literally threw us off.
Sure. Yeah. And this is the reality that we're living with, right? There's the, and I always say there's what South Africa aspires to be like, which is fantastic. I think we should have a society that wants to be better than what it was yesterday. It's great. But I want us to be also to be conscious of what South Africa is. And when we know what South Africa is, then we can formulate these anecdotes and stop practically being able to deconstruct some of these even colonial frameworks of thinking. Golden Miles Boodoo, thanks for calling in. Hi.
Yes, I'm holding.
Right here. It is Faith. Hi.
Thank you very much, Faith. Let me say this, because I've said it before and I'm unapologetic about it, and I'm not going to ask for permission to say it. My first language is Afrikaans. I've been speaking Afrikaans, eating Afrikaans, walking Afrikaans, and thinking Afrikaans, and that has made me a very silent background enemy of some people in very strategic positions. They end up calling you an enemy of the state when they are drunk of power, because the majority of them are very drunk of power most of the time. Now, I'm saying, you know, I have survived even up to today because I'm very fluent in Afrikaans, even amongst those who have got an issue against Afrikaans. And I said it before to say, look, after the storm of the 1976 riots, because there was this thing that we are not going to use Afrikaans as a standard medium of instruction, I said if there was unity amongst the political leadership then, they then should have said to the Afrikaners, we have fought against this language, but now we are going to call on our people to study Afrikaans in protest, studying it in protest, so that at the end of the day, 2, 3, 4, 5 decades thereafter, you can get into the mind of the Afrikaners, because they are still in charge here in terms of the economy, the diamonds, the gold, the land, everything of value is still in the hands of these Afrikaners guys. So that's why I'm saying I've been seen as an enemy of some of these people who know too much, because I'm very fluent in Afrikaans and they keep me in the cold and hope that I'll die in this freezer. And I'm not going to die there, because right here in the freezer, it is warm for me.
Sure, Golden. That is a very interesting perspective that you've given, and I do appreciate it. As I said, and I like what Mzonene was saying, that sometimes language or accent is in the eye of the beholder, but also corporate South Africa, who beholds it, right? If accent is in the eye of the beholder, who beholds corporate South Africa? Mpo in Pretoria. Mpo, you're an Uber driver and you get... What's going on with you being an Uber driver and passengers,
hello,
Mpo?
Hello, Faith.
Yes, sir.
First time caller on your show.
Oh, welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was saying I'm an Uber driver, and in most cases, you find that I drive around with like your white clients. And as you know, in Pretoria, mostly it's like your white Afrikaners where I'm based. Now, they get into the car, or Now they get into the car, it becomes tense because of, in most cases, they find that our African brothers, where they supposed to speak English with them, and then if you are black, probably in most cases with them, we are foreigners to them, you understand? So now I would switch my language to Afrikaans and start talking Afrikaans with them, speaking Afrikaans with them, and they start to become comfortable and they become happy because of what I've picked up with white South Africans here, especially in Pretoria. They can't really, really articulate themselves in English. So now I start speaking Afrikaans with them. That's when I start getting Buma 100 Randa. They start buying cold drinky. They start giving money away. You know? So in a way, for some people, like I'm saying, it helps. It helps. The accent thingy helps because of now, for example, I'll make an example also with my daughter. My daughter, she's also fluent in Afrikaans, Mariana Kimutuan. At school, in grade 11, her class teacher, I won't name the school, her class, the Afrikaans teacher doesn't really, really, really understand Afrikaans. Now, she makes my daughter to do the lessons plan in Afrikaans, teach the class Afrikaans. You understand? So in that way, my daughter somehow get the attention from the other students as well, you know, having to bamutsela ko godimo, in other words, because of this accent thing, you know.
Sure. But that is very interesting. Means as we close, though, you know, one way or another, we have to be able to move forward. And as you were saying, that it can't happen unless those very same spaces are filled with people from dynamic, diverse backgrounds who are not limited by the way that a person sounds, right? But as it is right now, on Monday, and I always say this, on Monday, somebody's going to go looking for a job. And the spaces that are going to be occupied and the spaces that they're going to be looking at for a job, if they're going to private sector, you have to go, who's beholding? Private sector is still within the hands of the white person, white males, right? Yes. And that person needs to be able to succeed and get a job at the end of the day, irrespective of how they speak. If we were to speak to that person right now who's listening to this conversation with the understanding, then heck on a second, accent does actually matter. What else would you say to them in being able to differentiate between getting that job on Monday and not getting that job? Because there's no point in you having a great English accent if you're unemployed, nor having a deep accent, a deep native accent, and not have a job. Do you know what I'm saying? So help us be able to, on Monday, that person must be able to get employed, and we have to look at the employment spaces.
Competent, be competent in the thing that you are actually coming to the interview for. I mean, a lot of great things have been mentioned in terms of, like, you out there to make an impression. Someone, one of the speakers, my fellow speakers, spoke about when you are standing in the mirror, dressing up to go for an interview, you know that it's just a layer of your influence, one layer. Language is another layer. Accent is another layer, because let's not conflate language and accent. It's not the same thing, you know. Articulation, being able to articulate something with the right pronunciation, with the right... Well, maybe not pronunciation, because that's biased towards advice towards accent. I would say to the person, make sure that you know what you are going to be speaking about. How you articulate it, that's something else. It's another layer. All this is just layers of influence and making... Like, you want to make a good impression to the people that are going to employ you. I'd like to close with this one, just my closing, to say that... We are a bit hypocritical as Africans, especially we radical black power and Africanist Africans, and almost everybody else black in South Africa, for hating Afrikaans and loving English. What's up with that? Why are we why did we choose English over Afrikaans as if the one is lesser? I understand there were some nuances about Afrikaans being forced upon the people, and I understand that context. But at the end of the day, I live in Centurion. If you're living this side, you need Afrikaans. The guy that I was just speaking to now is a black guy from Limpopo. But he speaks perfect Afrikaans because in the job that he's working in, he needs Afrikaans. He doesn't really need English. Really, he doesn't. But somebody else in another part of South Africa, like if you're in Durban, for example, your Afrikaans won't help you. But in Pretoria, your Afrikaans, like my brother who's an Uber driver said, it will. Mm. So at the end of the day, know what you're doing, be articulate, and remember that... Well, in Rasta, I always quote Rasta. In Rasta, we say word, sound is power. It's the word, the sound, and the power. So the power is in the content. The word is something else. And the power, though, is in the content of what you are speaking about.
Ooh, I like that. Menzi Masego, much appreciated. Dr. Sharon Munyaka, thank you so much. And Vumile Msweli, thank you so much. And for you, for coming into this conversation so open-minded. I get an opportunity to learn every single day, I swear, I'm on this platform. And I really do appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. So, accents. It looks as though it matters. But I think more than anything else, what this has given us insight into is that how much we still need to penetrate even those positions of power and economic influence, right? We need to be able to have those spaces diverse and dynamic so that they can truly represent what is happening when it comes to the greater societal construct of the country. Otherwise, we'll forever have those who speak like this and can actually articulate themselves be seen as those that are more serious, even though, by the way, they could, I'm not saying they are, but they could be lacking in content. So we've got a long way to go as a country in being able to deconstruct and decolonize, you know, even the way that we perceived ourselves as Black Africans. But let's keep talking. Heck, let's keep talking. It's 24 minutes after 2 o'clock.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.